I'm a curious bear. That's what I am. I'm a curious bear because I'm always asking questions. I often got remonstrated by teachers for asking too many questions. I've been told off in jobs for asking too many questions. And it's because I just want to know why things are the way they are. I like to challenge why things are the way they are, and I want to find a better way of doing them. And I will say one other thing. I worked for my professor of architecture at Newcastle Uni as a research assistant, and he said, "I like you, Melanie. You're like a ferret." And that's because I will keep looking and looking and looking and looking.
That's Melanie Bales Smith. Melanie's an architect, design director, and practice principal at Bale Architecture in Sydney. I'm Jeff Gardner, and this is Builtworks. It's the show about buildings and the people who make them. In this series, six Australian architects take us into their best work and deconstruct a favourite residential project.
Toomey and 235,000 a bid now, and again the market reaffirms its value. Toomey and 235, we sell it once, we're selling it twice, it's your last chance now. At Toomey, 235, all done, finished, all done, and we are sold. Congratulations and well done.
We're in Kirribilli, a compact and affluent harbourside suburb in Sydney, Australia. Melanie's clients, Bob and Sharon, had just bought a property there.
It is an interesting suburb. It has a beautiful feel. It has a wonderful strip of shops. It has direct access to the train station. From the ridge line, it falls downwards to the water, down from the ridge, down the hill to the Sydney Harbour. There's a lot of people packed into quite a small area.
Bob and Sharon's property was one half of a handsome Federation period cottage. That's known as a semi in Sydney, as in a semi-attached dwelling. It's basically one side of a duplex, that is, two separate dwellings located side by side, but attached to each other, sharing a common wall between them. From the street, Bob and Sharon's new home looks like a cottage, and from the back, it had expansive views of Sydney Harbour.
They had just purchased the house when they contacted us. In Sharon's words, she wanted to be able to walk in the front door across the threshold, and that it would not be a house that reminded you of its past.
That meant everything beyond the front door had to go. But the property sits within a heritage conservation area. So a development approval from the North Sydney Council was needed before work could begin.
North Sydney are renowned for being quite strict in many ways. They exercise quite a level of control, and thankfully, I guess, a lot of interest in the heritage buildings and the conservation areas that lie within the local government area.
Through her seven strong design team, Melanie directed the design for this project. The team named the project Dorzean House. Dorzean is a Dutch word that means see-through. Bob and Sharon love that. And in an unexpected twist, the owners of the other side of the semi decided that they wanted to do a similar renovation of their place too. It made sense to do it more or less at the same time. Melanie and her team christened this new project Zuster. That's Dutch for sister, as in sister of Dorzean.
There's a lot at stake, there's a lot of money to be spent, and it is better to do the very best job that we can for this site, for this building, to realise your brief and to not undercook it.
Melanie and her design team, and there are seven of them, had to think very seriously about how they could make the most of what is a compact and limited footprint on a very tight and steep site.
Every single piece of, you know, space in the entire dwelling, both in the floor plan and vertically through the house, had to bring purpose and meaning to the dwelling because there was no room for flab.
Melanie's got a dialed-in process, honed over many years, for efficiently creating design.
We start our process with a concept design stage where we produce three different design options, whereby we test different aspects of the client's brief, planning, cost, material, all sorts of different possibilities for the design.
To communicate the design and the project scope effectively, mood boards, sketches, and written information about planning, time, and cost are provided to the client. The process is designed to evoke for the client where the design team thinks the project is going to go in terms of the materials to be used and its tectonic expression, that is, how it could be built.
We're developing all these different visual and written materials to support the client's understanding of how the design is developing and how the parameters of the project are feeding into the process. And so it is an iterative process. There is research that we undertake. We fold in consultant information, especially if we're working with a landscape architect. We're going to want them to be very involved at that stage.
Preparing and lodging a development application, or a DA, in Sydney is no trivial matter. To prepare and lodge an application like this one in a heritage conservation area costs around $70,000 to $75,000, and securing an approval can be slow, difficult, and bureaucratic. Melanie had to create a design that she was happy with and that her clients would love. Then they needed council to approve the design without imposing heartbreaking conditions. Plus, it had to be something the community would support too, or at least not actively oppose.
And so we have several meetings in the develop design stage, during which at some point we do go and have a pre-DA consultation with council.
That's a meeting with council's planning assessment team. These pre-development application meetings help head off any showstopper issues before you've worked up a full application and spent all your money.
We want to try and smooth the path for the DA as much as we can. That doesn't mean that we guarantee that the DA is going to have an easy ride.
Easy ride? At the pre-DA meeting, council insisted the rear elevations respond to the conservation character statement.
Which was quite a significant ask.
It's plan number CP4591.3.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Is that the right version number?
Is that 3?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So this is the rear elevation that faces the harbour. Now, it's prominent and it's seen from local streets below and from across the water. Now, here are just a few of the view corridors looking back at the site. So, look, there'll be lots of eyes on this one.
I'd say the finish.
In conservation and traditional buildings, planners scrutinise the relationship between solid and void. Solid is a matter of presence, and void is absence of it. Solid elements include wall cladding, columns, parapets, spandrels, and solid doors. And voids, in the context of this project, refer primarily to glazed areas. The issue here was that the planners thought there was too much glass on the harbour-facing elevations. Those elevations are prominent and highly visible from the local streets below, from points around the corner, and across the harbour. So lots of people would see them and take an interest in how they looked. That's why council wanted these rear but harbour-facing elevations to address the conservation character statement. But that conflicted with Bob and Sharon's objective of having abundant glass to maximise their harbour views. So,
for both the clients, was a bit of a... they felt a bit confronted by that. They were like, well, you know, but nobody's going to see it. And it's like, well, actually, they really are going to see it. And we really are going to have to find a way to develop this so that we allow you to have the expansive harbour views that you want and that we balance the glass with the solid and void relationship.
Melanie has secured development approvals for dozens of projects in North Sydney's conservation areas. Council know that she's not going to put up some crazy dream scheme for approval, but she did need to find a way to maximise those harbour views for both sets of her clients and get council over the line.
A good architect can find a design solution that balances all of these demands. Some architects would say I'm too consultative and that I should stick to my design vision, but I'd like to think that my design vision is strong regardless of whether I've had to take on board more advice from council or not. So I think a good architect can work in very difficult circumstances.
Melanie's design approach to the harbour-facing rear elevations for both Dorzian and Zuster was minimalist, unobtrusive and recessive. Dorzian had a zinc-clad parapet with very sharp zinc hoods, and Zuster House had a similar minimalist approach, but it featured brick while deploying the same zinc hoods.
The zinc is important because as much as zinc has a high embodied energy, it is very low maintenance, it doesn't require painting, and it is a site where trying to paint things on a second story is so difficult and challenging. And so we were determined with both the architectural response for Dorzian and Zuster that the material language and the materials used minimised any kind of maintenance whatsoever. They will stand the test of time.
Using black zinc and designing hoods for the harbour-facing elevations was a truly masterful material and design strategy. The hoods helped the glazing recede into the background. There was still a lot of glazing in Melanie's design, but it didn't look like it.
We felt that by going with zinc, the black zinc on the Dorzian, that it was recessive, that zinc does connect with the heritage language, and we went with fenestration with windows and doors that were very vertically oriented.
Zinc roofing and cladding is a premium product. It's considerably more expensive than, say, a standard corrugated roof.
You're sort of a 4 to 5 times price range difference.
That's Matt Sterland on the phone.
My name is Matthew Sterland. I'm the founder and director of Sterland Roofing and Cladding and Prestige Roofing and Cladding Supplies, which is the largest manufacturer of VM zinc throughout Australia.
So you need a safe pair of hands to install zinc roofing, wall cladding and rainwater goods. In fact, in Germany, I was a bit surprised to hear this, the trade is a 5-year apprenticeship, and then there's master school, which takes another 2 years. But you know, attracting young people into the trades in Australia is, well, it's pretty tough these days. So developing and retaining a skilled workforce is a very big focus for Matt.
We put a lot of apprentices on. We've got 6 on at the moment. And then we do a lot of sponsored visas, working holiday visas, plus local tradesmen that transition over from being just your regular roof plumbers.
Matt told me he's actively onshoring his supply chain by stepping up the manufacture of more roofing product components in Sydney. He's growing a substantial business that's creating local employment opportunities. Getting it done, Matt. All right, let's get back to Dorzian and Zuster. So the zinc gave their harbour-facing elevations a maritime and industrial aesthetic, and that connected them with the old buildings at HMAS Penguin, a former submarine base that's nearby and still had heritage metal-clad buildings on site. The heritage planners liked that nodded reference and they loved the zinc's sober elegance. So the combination of material, quality of detail and execution worked really well here. But Melanie's design response had done more, much more, than just produce a winning rear facade.
And we pushed very hard for the form to occupy as much as we could, which wasn't extending the house very much, but it was enough to grab back a bit more space for the house.
Every square metre of additional floor area is worth tens of thousands of dollars in this location, and it can make the difference between a space working or not. But increasing site cover and growing a building envelope, even if modestly, is almost always met with resistance from council. So securing a bit extra floor area here was a big win. But even with everything agreed with council, it can still take ages for planning approvals to issue. So I was surprised. No, wait, scratch that. I was astounded when Melanie told me how long the development approvals took for Dorzian and Zuster.
For the Dorzian house, it was about a four-month DA, which for a conservation area project, which had a more contemporary response, was pretty good. And in fact, the Zuster house was even quicker. I think the Zuster house came out of council in, was almost what we've called that the heritage land speed record in the office, because I think it was in and out of council in about under 3 months. I think it must have been 10 weeks or something. We were really quite astonished. This is because we lay down the groundwork in the developed design process, and we take a very professional and collaborative approach to working, trying to work with council around what their expectations are. And they know that we're not cowboys. It doesn't mean that they like everything that we do, but they know that we're not going to put something forward if we haven't thought about it first.
Okay, so now Melanie had her development approvals in hand, secured in record time. There were no heartbreaking conditions imposed. No submitters had appealed council's decision to approve the applications. So a date with the Land and Environment Court wasn't necessary. Naturally, Bob and Sharon were pleased, and Melanie's Zuster House clients were happy too. Both sets of Melanie's clients approve the next phase. So Melanie's team engages supporting consultants for the construction documentation phase. They complete the construction documentation and secure construction approvals. Via a tender process, Scope Constructions are commissioned to build Dorzian and will construct for Zuster. Construction gets underway. It's go time. There's a lot to do.
On the Dorzian house, we worked with consultants who we had worked with for a number of years. So we worked with a town planner and a heritage consultant with whom we have worked for a long time. We worked with a landscape architect and stormwater engineer that, again, we had worked with on a number of projects. And then the structural engineer who was engaged for the construction documentation for Dorsey, and he then also was engaged for Zuster.
Melanie retained top-notch consultants. She knew and trusted them. And with trust comes speed. And with lots of money on the line, a quick game is a good game. Using the same consultant team for the Zuster house, which followed slightly behind Dorzian, gave the Zuster clients a big leg up. That's because everyone was familiar with the site and the building by then, especially Damien Hadley, the project's structural engineer and the principal of Cantilever Consulting Engineers. He was dealing with a compact and narrow site with a fall from front to back of 5 metres at a 14% grade.
That had enormous benefit because he was then, during the construction stage, was on site and doing inspections and observing how the existing building was behaving, because we effectively propped the roof and supported the external walls and gutted the entire interior, like everything came out, bar the roof framing for a while, and even then that came out. And we did a significant amount of excavation into sandstone.
Consultants, the good ones, are usually juggling lots of projects. So you need to keep them on task, that is, focused on your project. That's why Melanie insists that her consultants are well briefed, so that everyone's on the same page and going fast.
Everything we do is communication. You can communicate positively or negatively about the project through so many different means, and we want to make sure that communication is positive, that it's purposeful, and this is what's important to cultivating a strong consultant team, in my opinion.
There's often tension, considerable tension, between the available resources to complete a project and the client's ambition. And sometimes there's a gaping void between the two. But the reality of what's possible quickly becomes apparent on a project like this. So given Bob and Sharon's project ambitions, remember, nothing beyond the entry threshold was to be kept, and the site was compact, steep and narrow. I was curious to hear how Melanie got on with Dawsian House.
There was sufficient funding to do the project well without compromise. There were decisions that we made to be sometimes a little more economical than in some places, but generally the client was very focused on producing a great end result, and that if that took a little bit more time and a little bit more money and a little bit more effort, then that was better than doing a half, you know, half a job, basically. And so when you're working with that philosophy or that attitude, which is matched by the client's financial wherewithal, it doesn't make the project easy, but it certainly means that the decision-making process is fairly predictable, and the decision-making process can happen usually without much impediment.
With no big dramas to wrangle, Bob, Sharon and Melanie had the time and the bandwidth to carefully consider emerging opportunities, interior fit-out options and fixture selections.
In the Dawsian House, when you look down the hallway, you can see the exposed brickwork of the original party wall.
That wasn't in the original design.
In the original design, we were going to retain all of the roof framing up to the point of where the joinery peninsula sort of defines the end of the kitchen before you walk into the main living space. But over time, because we were propping the roof and you could see the underside of the roof and you could see the quite impressive space and volume that this created, over the time the client was able to be convinced to in fact have the raking ceiling and to take the ceiling line all the way up to the underside of the roof framing and to expose the brickwork.
So a much bigger volume of more interesting internal space was gained here.
That ability for a client to be opportunistic and to grab a spatial and material expression that we weren't ever really sure about during the design and documentation process, but that once the building was in construction was very obvious, that was fantastic to be able to do that.
Sometimes you have to pull everything apart before possibilities reveal themselves.
But we know that on some projects, clients aren't necessarily able to take those sorts of opportunities, because they often involve structural work, they involve a lot of rectification work, they involve a lot of extra labour, which is costly. So it was fantastic to be able to furnish the design decisions knowing that it wasn't going to break the bank.
Architects create design and then release it into the wild. They face critique, indifference, and sometimes get feedback, whether they like it or not. So with both projects now completed, and from start to finish they took 24 months, I was curious to hear if Melanie had received any feedback.
Both the sets of clients have had amazing responses to their homes and to the house, like the house as a single entity. What is interesting is that we went to a pre-DA meeting for another project and the council, the team leader who's not renowned for handing out sort of compliments said, oh, you know, your those projects on Carabella Street, they've come together very well, haven't they? And I thought, oh, yes, they have. And what was interesting also that was that the town planner who assessed Dawsian, I think he came and then did Zuster, and he came and stood in the backyard and he looked at the Dawsian house. And this was the inspection during the DA assessment. He went, gee, it's stunning. And you know, it's like, well, thank you. They get a lot of great feedback, and we've had a lot of feedback from people who see the houses from down on the water. You know, we get a lot of, I mean, Instagram is just insane. You know, we get so many people reposting pictures of the interiors and of the house, and PGH absolutely love Zuster. Went to the Think Brick Awards as a finalist. They love the use of their brick.
Melanie specified the dry pressed architectural range in Black Beauty by PGH. The Black Beauty colour provided an excellent aesthetic companion to the Anthra zinc cladding on Dawsian House in terms of colour, smooth surface, and the level of light reflectivity was comparable. The dry-pressed architectural range has a clean, sharp edge that allowed the brick units to resonate, both at an individual level, as the light falls on their smooth surface, but also as an impressive composition of both uninterrupted walls and columns framing the windows and doors. They looked just right with the black oxide mortar.
So this is interesting because you're then getting these responses from stakeholders who didn't even know you were doing the project until they see it and then they fall in love with it. It reminds you that a building comes to life in a very broad community, and people become interested if you do something that has meaning and purpose and is done well. We were very fortunate to have the opportunity to do two sides of a semi. That's not an opportunity that comes along very often. And to be able to do a building that is very exposed and isn't just sort of a backyard sort of warrior type renovation, with all due respect, because I've done plenty of those as well, plenty of, you know, things that people don't see from the street, and then when they see it in a magazine or on your website, they go, oh my gosh, is that what that looks like? Everyone can really see what these guys look like. The quality of the work that we did and our doggedness to push for what our clients wanted and what we wanted and to get the best result we could out of the approvals process and then through the construction process spoke volumes, and that it gave so much confidence to the clients on the other side of the wall. We've spent a lot of time refining the way that we work over a long period of time, and that project proved to me that when we have the opportunity to fly, we fly very high.
That was Melanie Bale-Smith, Principal and Director of Bale Architecture in Sydney. Melanie's also an Associate Professor at UNSW and a professional musician who plays the piano with extravagant ease. Oh, and she's a budding drummer too. Melanie's consultant team for both the Dorsian and Zuster projects included Partridge for stormwater engineering, Cantilever Consulting Engineers for structural engineering, and Ground Inc. for landscape architecture. For the Dorsian house, the builder was Scope Constructions, with the build there managed by John and Brent Carolyn. They won, by the way, a merit award for alterations and additions between $2.25 and $2.5 million at the New South Wales Master Builders Association Excellence in Housing Awards. Wilconstruct built the Zuster House. A big thanks to Melanie for deconstructing Dorsian and Zuster for us. I really enjoyed talking to her. And thanks to Matt Sterland as well for his info on zinc roofing and cladding. Over at builtworks.com.au, you can download the MP3 recording of this episode, grab a word-for-word transcript, read a detailed project description that includes a list of key products used, view a photo gallery, and some plans and elevations too. This is Jeff Gardner from Builtworks, the show about buildings and the people that make them.